So, Mikkel, do you remember the first time we met Dr. Michelle Jacobson?
I absolutely do. It was at the National Menopause Show, and I turned to you and said, "This woman is the goat," like, full stop.
You did. And oh my God, you were so not wrong.
And today's episode is further proof because, Michelle, this conversation was so good.
Really, really, really was. And for anyone who doesn't know who Dr. Michelle Jacobson is yet, she is a gynecologist and menopause specialist at Women's College and Mount Sinai in Toronto, an assistant professor at the University of Toronto, and co-founder of Coven Women's Health, which, if you haven't heard of it yet, you are about to become obsessed.
She's also known as the doctor that other doctors call when they need to consult on complex women's gynecological health related issues, which tells you everything.
Everything, oh my God.
And what makes her so special is that she's not just incredibly smart, like intimidatingly smart.
Right? Oh my God,
She's
yes.
also just the most fun person in the room. She's funny, she's warm, she's direct, and she genuinely deeply cares about women. In this episode, we get into so much: why perimenopausal women are the hardest group to treat, and why even good doctors struggle to help them, and the real story behind the WHA study, and what it actually means for hormone therapy.
Which, like, honestly blew my mind a little.
Yeah, agreed. We also talk about women with cancer who feel like they've been left out of this whole menopause conversation, and Dr. Michelle has so much hope and information for these women.
You are all going to love it. Dr. Michelle Jacobson, the GOAT, and honestly, one of our favorite conversations to date.
Because this is perimenopause.
And now, a word from our partners.
Hi there, Vulva speaking. We need to talk. For years now, you've been calling me the wrong name. I'm the vulva, not the vagina. I'm all the external bits you can see. My neighbor, the vagina, she's the internal tunnel connecting me to your uterus. You know, the baby highway. Different parts, different names. It's pretty hard to address dry, uncomfortable situations when you don't even know which one of us needs the attention. Now that we're properly introduced, can you please hook me up with some Iris? Their water-based moisturizer and lube are exactly what I need. No irritating fragrances, just clean ingredients to keep me happy and well hydrated, not dry and disgruntled. Eternally grateful for the hydration and finally getting my name right. Signing off, XOXO, your vulva.
And now that you've been properly introduced, do your girls a favor and use code TIP20 for 20% off at lovemyiris.com. That's TIP20 at LOVEMYIRIS.com.
Dr. Jacobson, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. I think you have to call me Michelle so that we can really just confuse everybody.
Michelle. Okay. Michelle McCall. Oh my God.
Perfect.
Yes.
It's like being back in my kindergarten class where there were four Michelles. And I always think now, because I deliver babies, that if somebody was like, "This is baby Michelle," I'd be like, "That's a weird name." Like, I don't know. It's like just really dated.
So, Michelle, you are known as the doctor that other doctors turn to for complex women health issues. And you've dedicated your career to menopause. Menopause oncology, hereditary breast and ovarian cancer syndrome. Why the focus? What made you focus on this population?
It's a great question. There's a personal component to it, and there's more of a "I'm a big nerd and this is really interesting and hard and so I want to do it" component to it. The personal component was when I was diagnosed myself as a BRCA1 carrier. I was already in a gynecology residency, but hadn't yet subspecialized. And I became very aware during my own challenges kind of navigating this. And if anybody should be able to navigate this, it's a doctor in the specialty. How little of a clear pathway there was for women who wanted just good advice on when to take the ovaries out, what they could do for risk reduction, you know, hormone therapy afterwards, the risks of premature menopause. So there was a real contrast between the breast pathway, which was so clearly defined, and the ovary pathway, which is so ill-defined at the time. So that drove me to say, what do I need? What are the components that I can bring where I can make this pathway fulsome and clear and evidence-based and help other women who are in circumstances like mine? But in that journey, learning so much about breast cancer and gynecologic cancer and spending time with specialists in these fields, again, became aware not of a personal connection to, but really of a recognition of another gap, which is their care stopped at the time that they were treated for cancer, mm-hmm. but they mm-hmm. had so much living left to do that wasn't being addressed from a quality of life and a health promotion and a longevity perspective, because everyone was just so afraid and didn't know how to advise them. And they're similar, right? They're sort of related, but they're a little bit different. But I was well versed in figuring out how to deliver this care because it was all sort of related. And then once you do one cancer, you become the cancer expert. And once you become the cancer expert, you become like the hard people expert. So now mm-hmm. you're seeing kidney transplants and heart transplants
wow.
and stroke
wow.
survivors. And then all of a sudden, people are like, oh, I'll just go to Michelle Jacobson. She'll know what to do because she sees hard people. So that's how I ended up where I am.
You're well, like House. Is that was kind of like, what
oh my
was
God,
character?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like House, except that I only do the job of a gynecologist and not a radiologist, interventional radiologist, internist, surgeon.
You're like, also and you're, absolutely lovely, not a raging prick. So, you know, let's just be really clear about that, too.
Yeah. Nor do I have a prescription drug addiction problem. So
excellent. Okay, so excellent.
A few differences.
But you are really effing smart. And yeah. It is such a delight to have really, really smart people who are also just really fun. Like we've had the privilege of meeting you in person a couple of times at the last two National Menopause shows. And there are people who just give off a great vibe, and you do. And so that's amazing, because it's not Thank always you. Very common to have super duper nerd smart people who are also really awesome to hang with and be around and bring good
I mean,
vibes.
I really like my job. I really like the work I do. I like the people I work with. I like the patients I look after. So I'm pretty happy.
Well, It shows. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your work, because there's a lot of it. Like I can't imagine what your schedule looks like, what your day timer looks like. And then you thought, hey, let's co-found a virtual clinic, which launched this past October. Is that correct?
We launched in June.
Oh, you launched in June.
June, beginning of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My apologies.
But that's okay. But really, the reason you may not know that is because so far it's been all word of mouth, no real formal marketing, and yet we have really helped a lot of women. I think so. It's cool if you think we launched in October.
I have no doubt. Clearly, right? Like, how amazing is that? So, what you did launch, Coven Women's Health. And it's a multidisciplinary approach to hormonal health care. That, of course, includes menopause, perimenopause. And yeah. And you know, it's not just you. There's an entire team. And I thought maybe we'll start with, you know, why you need the team approach, why we all deserve more than a 10 to 15 minute appointment to cover perimenopause, menopause, to postmenopause, depending on where you're at. And, you know, get into a little bit of the nuance and skill required to do what you do so well.
Coven came out of a desire to deliver the type of care that I thought everyone should have, but due to the confines of the system the way it is, mm-hmm. we don't have. Mm-hmm. So I would see women and they would, you know, ask for advice on things that are really important, like their mental health and their moods and their diets and their exercise and strengthening regimens. And I would say, you should probably see a good social worker or dietitian. And they say, do you have any recommendations? And I would say, No, like, I don't know, just go somewhere, right? And so I wasn't helping women or guiding them the way they needed. And I, as you kind of know, ran into this problem where my wait list was growing because everybody, thank goodness, wants to talk about menopause. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we have 20 plus years of physicians who don't know enough, even if they want to know more, to advise women in a evidence-based and helpful way. So they would just refer them on. My waitlist was growing and growing, and I became very frustrated that I couldn't help women faster and in a more fulsome way. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, what we really need is a way that I can scale my approach. And one way that I do that is I train fellows who have gone off all around Canada, placed fellows in Halifax and New Brunswick and Ottawa and Hamilton, who are doing what I do. So I'm so pleased about that. And that's within the covered health insurance, but also how do I scale my approach so that more women can get this care? Mm-hmm. And I spent a long time thinking about that and trying to figure out a way to do it. And then I met the right co-founder, which is so important in in building this kind of a platform, because I couldn't have done it just because I wanted to. I needed someone to actually know what they were doing from the business perspective. And that's Jen, my co-founder. So we couldn't have a coven without her. And that's where we got to talking about what does this look like and what's our offer. And even now, the way we're offering the Coven program is not even as much as I want to be able to offer, but it's a first step that women can access it from anywhere, that they are seeing a team of handpicked, amazing, funny, smart women professionals in social work and dietitian. You've interviewed one of our social workers yourselves, our nurse practitioner, our registered nurse health coach. We're a team, like we're a loving family team, and we offer really, really good care, because it's the type of care that I thought women should get. So yeah, the barrier is the financial barrier, because none of these things are free in any healthcare system. And yet, because we choose high quality registered professionals, they are covered if you have private insurance. So to me, you know, the access and the high quality care is the plus, the cost is the downside, but overall the product I think is phenomenal.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, you know, and maybe not off the top, but off the top, can you think of or give an example of, you know, even if you do have a medical provider who agrees to prescribe menopausal hormone therapy, for example, could you give us an example of some of the nuance that gets missed in that typical, you know, public system scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this podcast especially, it's perimenopause, right? Mm-hmm. Because our family doctors and nurse practitioners and primary care physicians out there who want to deliver care, they want to do it safely. Yeah. And so they're limited, right? They're limited by guidelines. They're limited by product monographs and what Health Canada says. And unfortunately, all those documents are based on the studies that are done. But who's a really hard group of women to study? Perimenopausal women, because there's no clear definition about what makes you perimenopausal or when you enter perimenopause or what those criteria are. So all these perimenopausal women out there who are not feeling like themselves, who are suffering, who are not sleeping, who have low moods, who don't understand why they're getting hot flashes even though they're getting regular periods, those women suffer because their doctors don't know what to do with them. They're not written about. They're not guideline described. The product monograph says, don't start this till after a year. Right. So we've got women suffering at 11 months of no period because they haven't quite made it yet versus women who are 13 months. So they get a free pass and they get their treatment.
We've had followers, listeners write in and say, oh my God, like my doctor, who's amazing, says that I can't start MHT until I'm in menopause. Help. And they've told me that that's according to, I think this in this one of the most recent instances, it was the Canadian Menopause Society guidelines. And so I, you know, went in, looked around and I read through and I was like, I get why if you are not Dr. Michelle Jacobson, OBGYN extraordinaire, or someone who's had a lot of clinical experience treating, helping women in perimenopause, I get why you would look at those guidelines and go, oh, nope, cannot, do not, right? It's tricky.
Yeah. But guidelines are meant to be evidence-based, but they don't reflect the fact that the evidence sucks for perimenopause. Right? So you're left with like a very small number of doctors who are experts in menopause who are willing to work outside the guidelines and live in the gray, as my friend Kelsey Mills likes to call it, right? Where you say, well, like I know how to do this and you fall into a category that I'm comfortable with, but I don't want to push that comfort on a doctor who's doing their best and just trying to be safe and work in an area they weren't really trained in and help their patients. Like, we don't want to make those doctors do something that they think they're causing harm. It's not their fault. They don't know any better. The guidelines are not fulsome. The product monographs are not helpful, right? They're helpful for a small subset of women. And I always laugh because I actually think we've gotten to a point where the menopausal patients are almost the easy ones to treat.
Right.
Right?
Like you're not the first usually, on this podcast like, to say, you know what?
Textbook.
Yeah. Once you get to that, there's almost a, okay, you're leveled out. You know, it's perhaps not optimal and what have you, like you still need support, but you're not doing this roller coaster up and down all over the place.
There's so many more nuances to treating perimenopause, and it starts with even recognizing that someone might be complaining of perimenopausal symptoms, which again is so varied across person to person in their presentation. So it's really hard. So that's actually a group of women that I think really benefit from this kind of care because they're getting that scaled approach, right? We can see as many perimenopausal women as we need to, as present to us with the expertise of someone who's like, you know, F it, like, I know how to do this. You know, let's recognize, let's validate, let's treat, and let's treat all of the aspects, right? I'm not a hot flash doctor. That's another thing that bugs me is when I go to sometimes to groups with key opinion leaders, the gynecologists out there are like, well, I know what to do for hot flashes and I'm comfortable, but I'm not comfortable prescribing sleeping, you know, advice because I don't know about sleep and I'm comfortable with hormones because I'm a gynecologist. But menopause is more than hormones. Menopause is all organ systems in the body, and we need to figure out a way to address a woman's needs as she enters this really confusing time that has very little research out there about it. And that takes a level of confidence and expertise that is unrealistic that everybody would have.
So well said. If we could just maybe touch on in the context of lack of evidence or shitty evidence, I noticed when I was going through your website, perimenopause is talked about as well in the same line as PMDD and PCOS. And I think that that is also something that is really hard for patients and probably regular providers. So maybe you could elaborate a little bit on those two things and tell us what they are and why they're so hard.
Yeah, I mean, PCOS and PMDD, which we can talk about, they're hard to treat and recognize and work with a patient together to achieve common goals at baseline. Mm-hmm. But when you have someone affected by PCOS or PMDD enter perimenopause, it gets extra confusing, right? Because you can't use those usual baseline characteristics to say, well, what's changed? Because that PCOS patient never got periods regularly in the first place. So the fact that she's not getting them regularly anymore is irrelevant, right? And she doesn't use that as a benchmark to recognize that this is a change. That PMDD patient who suffered so much every time she was in her luteal phase now feels that way all the time because she's having these luteal out of phase cycles. So she is constantly having PMS symptoms, but for her, they're debilitating and she's suicidal and she can't function and her body hurts. So what used to be predictable and cyclic by definition in perimenopause no longer applies because the cycles are no longer regular. So being able to piece that out based on history, open your mind to what the presentation could look like, and address the root causes rather than Band-Aid solutions is the really tricky part. And it's the part I love because my brain is going crazy trying to think of all the ways that we can recognize this and validate you and teach other people to recognize it. But at the end of the day, people just want to feel better. And that's what we do.
I love that. Talking about other things I love, love, love the name Coven, and so good. And you also have a podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes because it's amazing. It's super funny and also educational. Sorry, it's very educational, but
I'll take funny. Like, I want to be funny first.
It's also really enjoyable to listen to. So, and it's called Hysterical Women. So both great names. Please tell us why you chose these names.
Thank you for asking. This is my favorite question. So a coven, for those who don't know, is a community of witches. And when Jen, my co-founder, and I were thinking about names for our company and we were floating names by our friends and doing some sort of market research, coven was not the most popular because a lot of people don't know what a coven is. And yet, when you think about who we are, us Gen Xers, elderly millennials, people who are entering perimenopause and to some degree menopause now, that we are people who grew up on The Craft and
Charmed,
all the witchy stuff that is so fun, right? And it's so interesting. Those women were our heroes. They were confident. They didn't care what other people had to say. They did what they had to do to survive and to feel better no matter what the patriarchy said. And they were supported by a community. And that to us really embodied the notion of what we wanted to do. We wanted to be a supportive community of really interesting women who scared men so much they probably would have burned and drowned them in the 1600s.
Nailed it.
That's who we are. We're this like really funky, fun, quirky group of women. And so we identified with the witches and the people who were called witches. And we identified with the idea that a witch needs a coven because all of us need our village and our support system. So that's where coven came from. Love and now it's kind of turned into a running joke that the people who call it, like who mispronounce it, it's like a self-identifying thing of like, oh, you're not in the know. Like you're not.
Wait, what did they say? Oh, coven.
No, you said it right. You're fine. You're good. And apologies to anyone who hasn't, but it comes up a lot.
Interesting.
A lot of people are like, coven women's health. I'm like, you don't know what a coven is.
And
I'm saying this to you.
I'm getting more witchy as I get older. I'm like getting
I think we all are. Came up on Netflix that like The Craft was going to be on Netflix and that scene where she goes, we're the weirdos, mister. And I'm like, yeah, we're the weirdos, mister.
Yeah.
Like, that's why we have so much fun together. And so when we wanted to put our podcast together, we were thinking along the same lines. Like it's a very feminist approach, right? Like it's wanting to be the woman you are without conforming to what society or the patriarchy wants you to be. And so we wanted to reclaim this word hysterical because hyst in Greek means uterus. So a hysterectomy, that's something a gynecologist would do to take out your uterus. But in the kind of early 90s, to be hysterical meant to be crazy because you were a woman.
Yes.
And now we use it more to mean like you're so crazy or you're funny. And so it was this sort of double entendre of reclaiming hysterical, but also we're so funny. And so we wanted to put this podcast together. So we are the hysterical women of coven.
No, yeah, you nailed it. It's so good.
You so nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. And also, of course, we're hysterical. Look what we've been shouldering, putting up with. Like, damn straight we're hysterical.
Right?
You would be too.
It was fine when we died at 40, but like, that hasn't been the case for a really long time. So if we're going to live to 85 plus, we need people who can help us live our best quality, quantity, and health life. And that this all comes together of what our mandate is at Coven.
Love it.
So, so good. You mentioned earlier 20 years of physicians who don't know about menopausal care. And that stems from the WHI study in the early 2000s that terrified a generation of women and medical providers about hormone therapy. And you and other experts have been working to set that straight because that was never the case. So for our listeners who grew up hearing hormones, especially estrogen, cause cancer, what do they need to know about, I guess, the reanalysis of the data? How did it get so wrong?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the study itself, the WHI, it's a great study.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned so much from it. Mm-hmm. And the things that we learned can be presented in a really positive way.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is everyone likes a sensational story and a headline.
Yep.
And that is what was done egregiously to women, is capitalizing on how we can make this scary and interesting for a headline, which really overshadows the quality of the information. Because it's not interesting to say, everything's fine, hormones are good. It's interesting to say, what you've been doing for the last 20 years is scary and you're going to die, right? So it's really the way it was shared in the media that was so bad. Mm-hmm. So the WHI, for those who don't know, was a huge randomized control trial, which is the best type of research you can do. It tells you about cause and effect, and it looks at usually something, a variable, and a control group. So the control group in this setting was someone who was taking a placebo, so something that they didn't know if it was estrogen or nothing at all, but it was nothing. And the group of women who were studied were the women who were taking either conjugated estrogen plus a synthetic progestin, or if they'd had a hysterectomy and didn't require the progestin, they took conjugated estrogen alone. So we have these three arms of women to compare against each other. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting was the study was done in order to look at cardiovascular outcomes. It wasn't used to say, does this work for hot flashes? You weren't even supposed to have hot flashes if you entered the study because you would know what you were on if you had hot flashes.
Right.
So like this isn't really even a group of women that you can extrapolate to that mid-40s, early-50s person with hot flashes. This was looking at older women who wanted to know if estrogen was good for their hearts. So the average age of women in this study was 63 years, which is pretty old for starting hormone therapy. You know from the people that follow you and that you interview that perimenopause typically affects people in their late 30s to like late 50s, depending on your timing. And they included women from the late 40s and into the 70s. So when they did the analysis of these groups, immediately in the first few years, they found that there were more bad outcomes from a cardiovascular perspective and more breast cancer. So that's what went out there. Hormones cause heart attacks, hormones cause stroke, hormones cause breast cancer. Everybody should get off their hormones. But when they took a step back and the sensationalism died down and they reanalyzed, so they broke the women into groups of age, 40 and 50 versus 60 and 70, they found very different things. The women in their 40s and 50s had better mortality, less cardiovascular events, less strokes, less heart attacks. And the women who were on estrogen alone, less breast cancer compared to placebo. And that was even true at 20 years of age.
Yeah.
For the women who are in their 60s and 70s, yes, they had more cardiovascular events. And that is where these recommendations for a window of opportunity and starting hormone therapy before age 60 or less than 10 years from the final period came from, which is a nice recommendation. And it's actually a very flexible recommendation. But also, the women who took estrogen alone had less breast cancer after 20 years than the women who had taken placebo. And the women who had taken estrogen with synthetic progestin who did have more breast cancer was on a magnitude of 8 out of 10,000 women. So the way it was publicized was this is going to give everyone cancer. And in reality, if you look at the way you can classify outcomes, this is like an ultra low risk event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? But the outcomes and the impact was tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know. Right.
My mother was ripped off.
Yeah.
If you look at like things like prescribing rates, that all dropped, right? It dropped tremendously. It dropped really quickly. Nobody was getting their hormone therapy prescribed anymore. Nobody was filling those prescriptions. It was recommended against across the board. But you know what didn't drop?
Breast cancer.
Breast cancer rates. Right? Like, if anything, all we've seen is a rise in breast cancer rates over the last 20 years, right?
Yeah.
When I started med school, 1 in 11 women got breast cancer. Now 1 in 8 women got breast cancer.
Yeah.
So breast cancer rates or incidence is technically going up. And yet hormone therapy prescriptions definitely went down. So that to me should be enough that you step back and say what I thought I knew is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe we can talk about breast cancer patients, people with a history, a family history, et cetera. You were one of the experts who helped or who updated the 2021, I believe, the guidelines for the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada. Is that correct?
Yeah.
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 So, and we've interviewed actually a few cancer survivors, not just breast, but cervical as well. Mm-hmm. And the quality of life horror stories, Michelle, we're not telling you anything you don't know, right? It's heartbreaking. Can you help us understand what the evidence says about hormone therapy in this in these populations? And are there ways to help them have a quality of life and not suffer unnecessarily?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I think a really important caveat here is right now we talk so much about the benefit of hormones. that it's really scary for the women who are being told they can't take hormones. Because they think, oh, there's been this resurgence of interest and safety, but I don't get to come to the party. So I'm going to live a bad life and a shorter life because I'm not getting all the benefits that are touted to go along with hormones. So that's not true.
Yeah.
Right? There are definitely ways that we can optimize your health and your longevity that you don't have to suffer or worry that you are being denied something. That's from the behind the scenes stuff. That's what I call it. The bones, the heart, the brain, right? When it comes to the quality of life, this is where the breast cancer, not being able to take hormones, please, is the most obvious, right? Mm-hmm. It's affecting a woman's quality of life. And hot flashes are one thing that impact women, and they can impact a lot of women. They are the most common and specific symptom of perimenopause and menopause, and they respond very well to hormone therapy. And I'm sure you guys have talked about this on your podcast before, but we are in a new era where there are highly effective prescription therapies that treat hot flashes as well as estrogen does. They are safe. They are efficacious. They are becoming more and more readily available. So this is a game changer just within the last 12 months.
Yep.
That is a bit of a ray of hope for women who are suffering from hot flashes.
Yeah.
When it comes to the candy, so the neurokinin antagonists, the two that are approved in Canada are fezolinetant, which is also available, and elinzanetant, which actually has evidence for use in women with breast cancer and is approved, but is not yet available for prescription, hopefully very soon.
Okay. And one more question on that. Sorry.
Yeah.
In the back. If I'm 70 and I'm still having hot flashes and I've never taken estrogen before, I can take this
one of these?
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So there are not the same restrictions when it comes to age or time for menopause or reasons that you would avoid hormone therapy. For the most part, anybody could take these therapies, barring somebody with very poor liver disease and certain other medications. But again, that's going to be a very personal consultation. But yes, is the simple answer. The other thing that's important is to understand why can't women with breast cancer take hormone therapy? And it's not that they can't, right? It's that there is risk and everyone deserves an individualized assessment where they are able to make their own balance of risk and benefit, and then make a decision once they've been armed with the information that they deserve, right? So as a gynecologist and a hormone therapy prescriber, I don't withhold prescriptions to people who have contraindications. I give them information and I say, what do you want to do based on this information? Because only you know how bothersome your symptoms are and how scared you are about the risk of recurrence and what you're willing to go through and what your quality of life is, right? We can't make that decision for you. You have to make it with the information.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no. Mic drop. We're going to like blow that up and pump that out hard on social media. How wonderful and refreshing, and thank you. And please, anybody listening who is a medical provider, practice this way. Thank you.
It's important, and it's the definition, right, of patient autonomy and informed consent, right? We hide behind do no harm. But what if we're doing more harm by withholding?
Well, and why does do no harm seem to not include quality of life?
Right. Yeah. We had a patient through the Menopause Foundation of Canada. She went on their message board and said, my hot flashes are so bad. I've had breast cancer and I can't take hormone therapy. So could you please help me find somebody to give me medically assisted death because I don't want to live like this anymore? And like, it's the perfect example of missing the forest for the trees, right?
Yeah.
We won't give you hormones because of your breast cancer, but we'll kill you because your quality of life is so bad.
Jesus.
Right? Like, it's nonsense. Wow. And it's such a good example of individualized decision making, right? There is very strong evidence that the best outcomes from a breast cancer perspective in estrogen positive breast cancer have to do with lowering the total body estrogen exposure. Mm-hmm. So the best breast cancer recurrence information comes from people who go into menopause chemically, surgically, or naturally, and then are given medicine that stops them from making estrogen in any part of their bodies, aromatase inhibitors. So the proof of concept is there for why estrogen is bad if you are an ER-positive breast cancer survivor, because your benefit actually comes from estrogen suppression. Mm-hmm. But then to sort of further that, people who'd had breast cancer were studied in randomized control trials, again, which can tell us about cause and effect. And they found that for the regimens that those women were given, which was estradiol and synthetic progestins in various forms, that there was a higher rate of breast cancer recurrence. Mm. Okay. The breast cancers came back in the same breast or in the other breast. The studies didn't go on for long enough to see if there were distant metastases, but they didn't see any in the short term that they were following these women for. But the question of does it increase risk of recurrence is yes, mm-hmm. on the realm of about 10%. So 7% recurrence risk in people who didn't take hormones, 17% in women who did take hormones. But again, that's your choice, mm-hmm. right? This is the mm-hmm. number. This is the information. I can't always give you the exact risk for your type of cancer, the treatment that you've had. Like if you've had a double mastectomy, how do we apply this information to you? Because you're not going to get a local recurrence. If mm-hmm. you're going to get a recurrence, mm-hmm. it's going to be a distant recurrence, mm-hmm. right? Triple negative or ER negative disease hasn't been studied to the same degree as fulsomely, but there are nuances in the studies, like higher rates of recurrence than expected, even in the triple negative group. So it's not as simple as ER negative, you're good. But it's also not as simple as ER negative, you're bad, right? It's right. an individualized decision based on age, quality of life, constellation of symptoms, goals, and those goals change, right? When you yep. first get diagnosed with cancer, your goal is usually not to get diagnosed with cancer again.
Right.
But yes. if you've been yeah. suffering for 5 or 10 years, you start to sort of have that glimmer of hope that maybe that cancer is not going to kill me. But then what does the rest of my life look like?
Yeah.
That's right. when people really want to start having these conversations.
Interesting. And are there many people in your field that are specialized in this conversation? Like is in Canada, is this?
Are you?
I mean, there's not many people yeah, in the field of menopause in general. And then even within people who are experts in treating menopause, I would say there's still a lot of discomfort around the scary cancer, transplant, sick. People.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where this, like, I don't, this nickname or whatever of like the doctor other doctors turn to. Like, I'm usually someone people can come to and say, like, what would you do in this scenario?
So I know Coven is open to every person that was born with a uterus. That said, are you finding that you have a reputation out there that you're the breast cancer guru and more people coming to you with those types of?
Some, yeah. I mean, more and more. I would say Coven's client base is still primarily. People who are just looking to get a faster access to good menopause care, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and we love that. But people with cancer or complex medical needs should know that every consultation at Coven means a consultation with me, even mm-hmm. if they're not seeing me directly, because the nurse practitioner reviews every single patient with me.
Wow.
So we can say that every patient is reviewed by me. The plan is sort of approved by me. The recommendations come from a combination of me and the team. And so it, like I said, it's a way to scale my approach and knowledge, yeah. which not everybody has.
Obviously, clearly. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's the offer, right? Like, it's why we did this. Like, people will say, oh, sell out, right? Private. She went into Mm-mm. this to make money. Like, I don't take a penny from Coven, or maybe one day, right? But like, the purpose here was really to cut down on that 2-year wait list and get this knowledge and treatment approach out to everybody who needs it, whether they're from Kenora or, you know, Timmins and they don't want to come down to Toronto, or whether they're waiting on a wait list for 2 years and pondering medically assisted death because their quality of life is so poor.
Wow.
Yeah. No.
Are you planning beyond the Ontario border? Ontario yeah. borders? Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's come to like be the next step for us. We see very clearly that this need exists outside of Ontario. Of course, if Canada made sense and there were less barriers, we would be there already. Yeah. But when you have such a high quality team that you've trained so well, it's hard to expand. So either they need to get licensed elsewhere, which has barriers, mm-hmm. or we need to find people who are just as good elsewhere and train them. So there are barriers to expanding, but it is the number one goal because that's what we want. We want to help people everywhere.
Everywhere. And so much help is needed everywhere. Yeah, that's amazing. So for listeners who can't get access to Coven, but they know that they need and deserve better menopause care, do you have any advice for them to get that support?
Yeah. So first of all, like keep checking because we'll get there in the near future. But second of all, I think the Menopause Foundation of Canada is a really great resource for people across Canada to check in and say, you know, who and where should I go based on where I'm at right now? They have lots of tools and charts and recommendations to direct you no matter where you are. And the other thing that we have done at Coven and can do at Coven is see people from other provinces to give advice. We just can't order lab work and prescribe. So sometimes if all you need is to talk, be validated, help with your goal defining, and then see someone to give advice and take a note back to your doctor saying, this is what I need, we can do that.
An action plan. Oh, my God. Oh, that's magic.
Oh, I'm going to be calling you on behalf of a relative right no after problem. We're done with this. Amazing.
Wow.
Oh, that's so
really
exciting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have someone who's in need of some PCOS expertise.
And I mean, there are so many people who are in need of PCOS expertise, and we're not quite talking about PCOS so much yet, right? It's not that this is PCOS podcast and, you know, there's not influencers talking about PCOS, but we probably should be because this affects a lot of people and it affects their quality of life. It affects their long-term health. So that's why we took the Coven model, which started with menopause, perimenopause, and said, actually, this applies to everybody. You're an adolescent with painful periods, you're missing school, you're nauseous, right? We can help you. You're wondering about your fertility potential because you're not sure if you should keep taking birth control pills. Like, we know that too. You're postpartum and trying to figure out contraception in between your kids, but you've had a heart transplant. We can help you, right? Wow. And so on and so forth. PCOS, PMDD, like, it doesn't matter. If it's hormonal, if it's women's health, we either know what we're doing and can help you, or we know everybody. So we'll direct you to the right people.
Amazing.
Love it.
Given your level of expertise and the expertise that you were associated with in your line of work, what aspect of women's health would you say needs the most attention right now? You know, Michelle and I win the lottery and we're like, okay, we're going to make a dent in this problem. Where do we donate?
It's a great question because I actually, you know, 5 years ago would have said menopause.
Mm.
But I don't think menopause actually needs more attention right now. Mm. I think it needs better studies, better evidence,
research,
more oversight. So maybe there, maybe it's you
maybe
take
more
that
research.
Money and you do studies in people that we actually want to apply this information to, like perimenopause, right?
Yeah.
Because having high quality studies would be really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And then also researching that for the women who can't or don't want to take hormone therapy or have contraindications to it, beyond the hot flash, how are the ways that we can improve your long-term midlife and beyond health? And then there's that dissemination of information, like exactly what you're doing and what I spend many nights a week doing, giving talks, right? Educating. How do we come up with tools that actually get the message across? Mm. I want every doctor to know how to recognize perimenopause and to treat it, even if it's not what the guideline says. So how do we teach and make that education stick? That's where I would want to see those resources go.
Amazing. Okay, now we just need
to
start buying.
Ticket.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
I already did. So
I was
going
to say we had a flawed strategy because I don't buy lottery tickets. Excellent.
It's a good thing there are two.
I'm on it.
Excellent.
I'm on
it's a good thing there are two of us. Yeah.
Michelle, what is the one thing you would love every woman to know about perimenopause?
It's a tough question because there's so much. But like the truth is, and I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, like I see women who thrive through hard things. And I see women who let it get the best of them. And it's not their faults, but their quality of life is so poor when the same thing has happened to them, right? This is a resilience problem. Mm-hmm. This is a strength and exhaustion and a lack of support problem. So what I would want everyone to know is that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to fixing your symptoms. But one of the most important parts of the approach is that deep, uncomfortable mental health trauma, resilience piece that we all have a little bit of a problem with. And that having the right team to support you through it can make all the difference. So if it's uncomfortable and you just want that silver bullet, that's not going to work. But if you're willing to do the work with the right people to support you, everybody can thrive through perimenopause and beyond.
So well said. And so right up my alley. Love it. Love it.
Like, challenge accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
I got this.
I got this.
And it's hard. And I'm not saying everyone should be able to do it, but they should know that there's a component to it that they can be, they can do even the hardest things with the right support behind them.
Absolutely. And that, I think, also for anyone listening who's just dipping their toe into this water, which can seem really scary, so worth it.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's the benefit on the other side of it. Like I said, everyone can thrive. Like, there's a lot of good that comes to being like 40 plus, not giving you know what anymore.
We can say fuck, not giving
swear away.
Are we allowed to swear? Like, not giving a fuck, like, right? Like being independent, not like, yeah, there's this sad part about like my fertility potential's gone and I can't have babies anymore, whether you could or couldn't. But there's also this like very liberating part to it, right? Like, if I needed a new partner tomorrow, I wouldn't care if he was someone that I could raise kids with. Like, I would just be looking for someone for me. Yeah. Not that I'm saying I do. Like, I really love my husband. He's great. But like, I just think about this all the time, like how liberating it is to be past all that, the periods and the fertility and the breastfeeding and all that stuff. And like, just able to focus on the best you for the rest of your life.
And getting to know who you really are, right?
Without defining you by your kids and your marriage or lack thereof or career, like a lot of that big stuff becomes behind you to some degree. And then it's uncomfortable, but then you get to really like embrace your inner witch.
Love it.
Yes, please.
Love it. Can we just be de facto coven members?
Yes.
You know, just sides?
Yes, you can.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
I grant you into the coven.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Michelle, Dr. Jacobson, I think we'll just start calling you the GOAT, you know, whenever we see you. Like, so good. So good.
That would mean so much to me. I want to be your GOAT.
You are.
You are. That's done.
Done. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.